Hello and welcome to the Blue Economy Podcast, presented by Rhode Island, the Ocean State. I'm your host, David Hirschman, and on today's episode, we're talking events, specifically Oceanology International, a 50-year-old London-based trade show that is one of the world's leading marine science and ocean technology conferences. Our guest today is the event's director, David Insey, who told us about some of the changes that the pandemic forced organizers to make this year and how he thinks the event will evolve when COVID subsides. He also gave us his take on some of the major technologies and trends driving the blue economy going forward. But before we get started, a quick reminder that you can learn more about the Blue Economy Podcast and catch up on past episodes on our website, www.blueeconomypodcast.com. And we're also out there on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. And we'd love it if you could subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Now here's our chat with Oceanology International Director David Insey. So welcome to the podcast, David.
Yeah, hi there, David. Thanks very much for having me.
Sure, of course. So before we talk about this year's conference, which I imagine is going to look very different from past years, can you just give us a little bit of background on Oceanology International? As you said, you're celebrating 50 years this year. How did the event get started and how long have you been personally involved?
Yeah, fine. No worries. Well, yeah, you're quite right. Oceanology turned 50 last year. It was actually in 2019. The event started as, and it's probably a trade show. Fair to say, it's a trade show, an exhibition with a huge area of content and conference attached to it. But first and foremost, it's a place of business as a trade show. It started in Brighton here in the UK in 1969, and it was actually formed by the Society for Underwater Technology, which is the preeminent learned society when it comes to subsea and ocean technologies over here in the UK and Europe, and also has some quite strong ties over in the US. They started it originally, with a predominantly a marine science focus and background. Again, as I said, back in 1969. And then what happened quite quickly after they'd started it as I believe it was taking place every 3 years. When you get to the very early 70s in Aberdeen, all of a sudden oil and gas was found offshore Aberdeen, and the requirement for some of the existing subsea technologies and certainly the development of new types of subsea technology to help in the application of that industry sort of rapidly formulated the growth of the event itself. I think the first one, and some of your listeners, maybe certainly over here in Europe, might know the exact numbers, but there was about 600 or 700 people came to the first event, and there was 100-150 companies that were involved in that exhibition. But then that sort of grew quite rapidly. My understanding is, and it's well before my time, but in the mid to late 70s, SUT sold the event to a commercial events company that then continued to grow and develop the event in Brighton over the next 30 odd years, if not more. And then the company that I work for, which is a company called Reed Exhibitions, purchased that event organizing company back in the middle of the 2000s. Maybe just a little bit of background about Reed Exhibitions. We're one of the largest trade show organizers in the world. We've got offices in over 35 different countries, including the US, obviously here in the UK, and anywhere else that you might sort of imagine. And in normal times, and I know we're going to talk about sort of COVID and its effects on the events industry a bit later, but in normal times, we would connect anywhere of upwards of about 7.5 million people a year at around 520 odd trade shows in different places around the world. So Reed Exhibitions purchased Oceanology and a portfolio of events from that company, as I said, in the early 2000s. And around about that time, the event moved from Brighton to London. And sort of as a company, we've developed and grown the event alongside the growth of different areas of application and different types of technology in that time period as well. But personally, I've been working with Reed Exhibitions since 2013, and I first started working officially as in the management of Oceanology as an event 6-7 years ago. So beginning of 2015, I sort of officially took over the ocean side of things.
How big an event is it? You know, how many attendees do you have? How many exhibitors?
Well, again, in normal times, that's probably the best way to describe it. No, at the last event, there was just over 7,500 attendees and around 450 companies. Before we had to postpone earlier in the year, we were on track to have about 8,500-9,000 attendees and over 500 companies. So certainly grown in a fairly decent way from the original back in Brighton 50 years ago. Sure. When there was, as I said, 120, 130 companies or something like that, and 600 or 700 people. Interestingly enough, though, you can tie back the heritage of some of our exhibitors today. A few of them, actually, you can still tie back to either maybe not the original company that exhibited back in 1969, but certainly you can tie it back to. You can see the progression of those companies and growth as they've merged and been acquired or developed new ways of working.
Sure. Well, so, you know, over the past few years, at least from our end, it seems like there's been an increasing mainstream focus on blue tech and the ocean economy. Mm-hmm. Has interest in the event grown alongside, I guess, interest in the sector itself, you know, kind of writ large?
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that it has. It's always been a very technical product technology focused event. And there's a couple of different areas, I suppose, that I've certainly seen growth in. First of all, there's specific industries that have grown and developed. I mean, offshore wind in the US, for example, as a nascent market, is one of huge potential and certainly application of what we would call the ocean technology that's on display usually at our exhibition and conference. There's a lot more, I think you can see a lot more of a strategic view when it comes to either policy regulations or just support from a government level in many different countries, whether it's the US or Canada or here in the UK or across Europe. I think there's been, there certainly feels to have been a much more of a cohesive recognition from governments of just how big the blue economy actually is. And bearing in mind as well, from an oceanology point of view, we're certainly focused on large areas of the blue economy, but there's maybe other bits that we're not so focused on as well. Fisheries, for example, would be one area that we're not particularly focused on. Tourism, for example, as well. But when it comes to lots of different end user sectors that require the sorts of technologies that are on display at Oceanology to help them work more efficiently and effectively, that's kind of where we fit best.
So are there any kind of specific countries or regions in the world that are typically well represented or better represented at the event? And I guess are there nations that you would say are leaders in the space?
Yeah, I mean, the one really fortunate thing and great thing about working on Oceanology, which is, you know, my day-to-day 24/7 when I'm working is focused on the development of Oceanology in London and other events that we have around the world, is that I've been involved in the events and trade show industry for 20-odd years, and it's probably one of the most international events that I've had the luck to be working on. It truly is a global meeting place for the entire supply chain when it comes to the technology, from component manufacturers through to OEMs and platform manufacturers through to end users through to their customers and everybody in between. You know, we have exhibiting companies that use it as the meeting place for their entire team because they know it's only held every 2 years. They can do a few different things at the same time. They can get their team together and do some internal stuff that might be difficult to do in the normal ways of working. And at the same time, all of the customer base and distributors and supply chain is doing the same thing. You know, there's probably about 75, 80 countries represented across the attendee base. In terms of leaders, I mean, when you're looking at Europe, the UK, Norway, France, Germany, you know, would be ones that spring immediately to mind. The Dutch as well, you know, that very much a heavy North Sea focus and in some of the sectors that we're quite strong in when it comes to things like offshore oil and gas, for example, or offshore wind, you know, those are the bases that have developed from the very beginning. Canada and the US are actually our second and third biggest market for the entire show, whether it's for exhibiting companies or even attendees. You know, so there's a huge amount of interaction across the Atlantic whether it's industry, research, or you know, academic or government. And then we also have quite a strong Southeast Asian and Chinese presence. Haven't run it this year, but you know, we've been running an oceanology in China in Shanghai for the last 8 years. The American audience and the American market is so strong for us that we and it's essentially, I think, the largest domestic market in the world for ocean technology. We have a show in San Diego that, you know, we run on the off year to London, and we do that because we know that there's an audience that would never come to London because it's quite a long way and it's difficult, you know, sure. There's budgets and time, etc., that affect those decisions. But there's more people in America that wouldn't come to London than that do. So very much worthwhile for us to develop and create a market and audience and event there.
Well, so, you know, major conferences can often serve as a barometer for the business community. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, I guess, the marine tech industry more broadly. You know, I guess, what are some of the major issues that you see people trying to solve for with tech right now? And where do you see the focus going, I guess, more over the next decade?
Yeah, okay. I mean, as I said, we service, if you like, from a application point of view of the technology that our exhibitors and the companies that work with us are selling into, probably at least 15, 16 quite identifiable end user sectors that the users of the technology are coming from. The energy sector is and always has been hugely important from an event point of view. And depending on where we are in the world and where that audience is coming from, there might be a slightly different area of focus. You know, the offshore oil and gas sector is the traditional, if you like, and has been key to driving the development of underwater unmanned systems, surface systems as well. But then if you look at the US, you know, there's that established Gulf of Mexico oil and gas sector and then offshore wind, which is completely new. And if you look at the North Sea, that's been established for 20 plus years, and certainly the European and UK companies are leading the way. Again, if you look at aquaculture, it's having a huge uptake in terms of application of some of these technologies as certainly farms become deeper and deeper offshore, you know, more autonomous, and certainly with more high capacity imaging and sensor systems. You know, the show itself, traditionally, you could almost say it's a data acquisition show. A lot of the technology, the majority of it, is involved somehow in data acquisition, data analysis or storage or transfer. You know, all of the vehicles and unmanned platforms that we have are basically receptacles for different imaging sensor and data acquisition systems, whether it's used for the marine science sector, whether it's used for an oil and gas platform, a port, a harbor, whatever it might be. The reason it's only been every 2 years is quite traditionally a lot of that technology has maybe not had a huge development curve. You know, it's not quick. Sensors haven't changed too much. I think there's certainly lots of stuff happening more recently, but traditionally that sort of application hasn't changed too much, and maybe it's the way of serving that application that has changed. In terms of any other, I mean, autonomous systems is a massive area of growth, whether it's for autonomous survey in the oil and gas sector, either seabed or in and around assets offshore. You know, you can see a huge amount of development in the amount of companies that are trying to apply these technologies to save costs. Over the last 4 or 5 years, you could see a massive area of development when it came to, you know, companies working in the offshore oil and gas sector that were needing to reduce their cost base. And the way that you can do that and also enhance safety is to reduce the amount of manned presence offshore. So again, you can see companies like offshore survey companies like Fugro, for example, really being able to drive and sort of see a roadmap to having those types of technologies become commonplace in terms of how that industry works. I think you'll also see that float into the offshore wind industry as well, because it's the same companies that are looking for different opportunities and different applications of pre-existing solutions.
Well, so, you know, something like shipping is such an old industry with, you know, very expensive assets and infrastructure, and then also major players located all around the world. And so I think it, you know, it makes sense that the industry has been slow to embrace the kind of digitization and innovation that's transformed other industries. I guess from your end, do you see an increased willingness to innovate among companies in your orbit? And I guess what are some of the challenges to that?
Yeah, I think the short answer would be yes. And I think I wouldn't consider Oceanology a maritime show, if we want to make that distinction with the shipping industry, I think you can see that a lot of the applications when it comes to autonomy are being driven maybe at an Oceanology level, which is possibly smaller scale, certainly in terms of the size of vessels, but you can see that technology has already transferred and is looking to be scaled up in a maritime context. So yeah, I think in some respects you could almost say that the Oceanology community and areas of expertise are the initial drivers with some of these applications that might become more widespread in the wider blue economy. You know, you can see that with some of the large scale aquaculture farms that are coming out of Norway at the moment. You know, pre-existing imaging and sensor technology that has been used maybe in marine science for research purposes for a long time that are now getting applied in large scale commercial ventures in that case for large scale, you know, deep water offshore fish farms. And I think, yeah, in each of the different sort of key application areas of Oceanology that you could look at, you can certainly see innovation at all points. And you can see sort of roadmaps, if you like, for some of those applications into other areas. In terms of innovation, you know, we generally, if we have 450 plus companies at the event, at least 100 to 150 of those would be new. And I would say at least half of those would be startup either companies or startup technologies. You know, we have a Future Tech Hub Zone, which is 20 plus startups that have been operational, certainly operational for less than a couple of years, technology that has either not yet come to market or only been on the market for less than 12 months and, you know, employing less than 10 people. So very different from some of the big multinational companies that we work with, but they're the future of the industry. You know, they're small scale, agile, able to innovate and then potentially scale up or develop the company further in the future years.
Sure. Well, are there any specific areas within what you cover that you see as, I guess, major drivers of the ocean economy or things that you're sort of like particularly focused on right now? You know, as you mentioned, you know, in the U.S. And especially here in our home state of Rhode Island, offshore wind is having a moment as a particularly exciting opportunity. I guess, you know, what other sectors do you have your eye on among the companies that you cover?
Yeah, I mean, wind is hugely exciting for us on both sides of the Atlantic, whether it's, you know, further development of existing assets here in the UK or, you know, new markets in the US. It's always been a big driver from an audience point of view for us. Obviously, offshore oil and gas is continuing to be hugely important, but not without challenges for companies that are working in that area. I still think there's a lot of development of technology that is driven from that direction. When we're looking at, again, autonomous systems, the defense sector is hugely important, but it's a fairly focused area of the defense sector that would come to Oceanology either from a survey or surveillance type application. Yeah. Anything to do with offshore resources, whether it's, you know, again, a formulating concept globally for offshore mining or deep ocean mining, or things like the aquaculture sector. You know, we were working in San Diego with the guys from Catalina Sea Ranch, which is, you know, offshore California, deep ocean farming, you know, a very different concept to maybe the traditional aquaculture side of things. So, energy, anything to do with climate adaptation and sustainability is going to be huge areas of interest for us. If you look at a sort of more global initiative types of things, you know, large scale ocean observation when it comes to seabed mapping and the Seabed 2030 project is going to be hugely important as an industry and for us as an event to be focusing on over the coming years. We've got the UN Decade of Ocean Science, you know, which again, it's not necessarily changing some of the work that's already happening, but it puts a slightly different area of focus with different groups that then can create opportunities either commercially or from a research point of view for the organizations that we work with.
So, you know, for this year's event, like everyone, you've obviously been impacted by COVID. You mentioned that before. Oceanology was originally scheduled for March and then it was rescheduled due to the pandemic. And now you're hosting the conference virtually in December. Can you talk a little bit about the event planning process during the pandemic? You know, I guess when did you realize that your team needed to pivot to virtual and maybe some of the thinking that's gone into that?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's certainly been a bit of a challenging year all around, and not just for me, but for the events industry in general. In terms of if we look back to March, you know, because we work on a 2-year cycle, my team here has been working on the event since March 2018. You know, we have loyal support from many of the different stakeholders and partners and exhibitors that we work with that had all been committed since 2018 as well to participate in the 2020 events. If you look back at what happened in February into March, you know, there was quite a steep curve in terms of how that situation progressed from something to keep an eye on to actually, I don't think we're going to be able to actually run this event. And what ended up happening is we chose not to run the event in March. And it was a decision we made talking to, you know, lots of our customers, lots of our exhibitors, trying to discern whether customers and visitors were going to be able to travel or willing to travel to London. And whilst everyone was still able to do it and there wasn't any regulations per se at the time that we postponed, in hindsight, if we had sort of pushed ahead and tried to do it, and this was all 10 days before we were due to open, we would have actually been shut halfway through the event, which would have been absolutely horrific sort of situation for anyone to be in. Fortunate enough to have a very understanding group of customers, exhibitors, predominantly, and visitors who the industry as a whole, I think, was very supportive of the decision that we chose to make back in March. Again, we not by choice, we were given dates in December at the XL venue in London where we hold the event, because that was actually all that was available at the time. I think we were the second event in the UK to actually postpone at the beginning of the year. And I remember at the time saying to my contact at the venue, well, that's not really good enough. I'd like something a bit earlier in the year, because I think, you know, there was an expectation from many people that it was going to settle down after 2 or 3 months and things would be certainly back to slightly more normal after about 6 months. You know, as it turns out, that didn't happen. And we've all faced challenges throughout this year, both, you know, personally and as businesses. Around that, if we look at then the postponed December dates, I suppose back in July, August, we were, you know, the thought had never gone away of what if we're not allowed to run. But what was becoming quite apparent was, you know, some of our core visitor markets, including the US and Canada in particular, it was becoming fairly clear that there might be self-isolation policies in place when people were entering from the UK from those countries, which obviously makes it difficult for an exhibitor or a visitor to attend. So we were already looking at a hybrid solution to engage predominantly at the time, US, Canadian, some of our Southeast Asian customers with visitors who were all still very much intending to come to the physical event in London. But I suppose at the same time, when we were looking at the solution itself, it was plan B, C or plan C, you know, can this be scaled up if we need to, because we're unable to run the physical event at all. And that's the situation that we found ourselves in. Obviously, the timing is a lot more spaced out, you know, a couple of months out, we were able to say, right, we're not going to be able to run the physical event. And now we need to develop OI Connect, which is what we're calling the virtual event. And really try and generate, at least in part, some of the connection and connectivity and meetings and discussion that would normally take place physically, at least replicate some of that in part, because that's at the end of the day, that's my job and our job with the team here. You know, we we put people in the same room that are interested in solutions. They either provide the solutions or they're interested in it. And at the end of the day, that's what we do. You know, I'm an events person. I'm not an ocean guy, although I love working in this community and in this industry. So that's what we're trying to do with OI Connect. You know, it's a very different method of interaction. I think people are possibly more used to certain elements of it now than they were 6 or 7 months ago, because no one's been able to go to any physical event. But what we do know, or what I do know, because we've, you know, all we've been doing is talking to exhibitors, visitors, delegates throughout the whole of summer, is that no one's been able to really do exactly, well, most people haven't been able to do exactly what they want to do. Yep. You know, it's maybe things aren't quite as effective. They're not quite able to have that, you know, that core group of meetings and discussions that you would normally have at a physical event. You know, exhibitors, commercial companies. Sorry, yeah.
No, one of the hardest things I think to replicate is this kind of the serendipity of running into and meeting someone that you wouldn't normally have made a meeting with in advance or whatever. And so I would imagine that sort of on a virtual platform, people are getting better and better at it, but there's nothing substitutes for in person, I guess.
No, and I agree. And look, we're not trying to say that we can replicate everything that would happen at a physical event. Right, one thing I know is that everyone, myself included, is, you know, there's a suitcase by the door waiting for the day that we can get to a conference or an exhibition, trade show, whatever it might be, because people are very much waiting for that to happen. But the flip side of that is that we have an understanding that people haven't been able to do some of that stuff in their own way. So what we are looking to try and do is provide a platform that can help connect this community together in some way. There's a lot more visibility, I suppose, than you would have if you were just walking around the trade show. Exhibitors can see, you know, who the attendees are, what they've said their interests are. There's recommendations and matchmaking that'll be going on, trying to say, look, you've said that you're interested in manipulators on unmanned systems. Here is some companies that manufacture manipulators in unmanned systems. So what we're trying to do is give people the tools and the visibility to connect with each other. I think that the challenge that we've got and the bit that we're working on for the whole of this month and we'll be doing into next year, I would imagine as well, is an education process to say, you know, you can actually achieve this stuff on the platform, providing you want to, and providing you do look to engage. You know, you can build your networks and meet new people to create new opportunities for you. You can share knowledge by talking to people, but it's a two-way street, right? Not normally two people might walk past each other and say hi in the physical sense. And that's, as you said, it's quite serendipitous and happens quite naturally. What we're trying to do is get people to understand that this can still quite happen quite naturally on this platform as an example, but it needs to be reciprocal. You know, we all have data policies and want privacy and that is all fully taken into account. But you know, if you're interested in something, is what we're saying to people at the moment, is if you have a genuine need and something that you're trying to, that you would have tried to achieve because you were coming to the physical show, then jump on the platform, have a look through it and try and see if you can do the same, at least in some respects, virtually. Sure. You know, all exhibitors will be on there, that you'll be able to explore the latest in technology, discuss developments across different areas of industry from, you know, the 180 products and services that you would normally see physically at the show. We still have a huge conference program that will be being broadcast. So from a learning point of view, you know, that content will still be there. But what we're really trying to encourage and develop is that capacity to actually have a video meeting with an exhibitor or with someone else at the show. Maybe not to have the full conversation that you might have done and then, you know, gone off and had a cup of coffee, but at least do that initial point of contact, exchange details, figure out what people are actually looking for, and then you can take that into the months and into next year.
Makes sense.
And develop it further.
Do you think there are elements, kind of virtual elements that you would see remaining after in-person events are back in action?
Yeah, I think 100%. I think if you look historically from an events industry, the digital side has always been, we'll get to that. Because at the end of the day, and I don't say this with a grain of salt, a good event is a really good event, and there's so much that you can do in person. And my team and lots of people that we work with or compete against are pretty good at it. We have a good understanding of who we're trying to get in the room, as I was saying before, and then the rest happens quite naturally. I think it will be interesting to see when large scale events actually do take place, and it'll change in different parts of the world. I mean, we have an office in Beijing, and they've been going to and holding events for the last 3 months.
Wow.
In terms of B2B trade shows, there was a few that started in Europe that have been put on hold, but I could see Q2 maybe into summer next year. It certainly in the Northern Hemisphere, that would be when things will start to pick up. But it will be interesting to see how long it takes for people's behaviors to change. I think there's a huge group of people that will be ready, waiting, and jump on a plane
Sure.
to go and do whatever they were doing or wanting to do. But then there will be another group of people that maybe aren't quite so willing to do that. And then I think the other interesting thing is that what we'll find is, out of necessity, we will make these types of platform and connections work and improve on them. My company has run six, seven events in the last 3 months in a similar way to how we're running OI Connect. And after every one, we've managed to learn, do things slightly differently, change the way we're getting people to engage, et cetera. So there's a huge rapid learning curve happening within the event sector right now. And it actually opens it up to a huge audience that would never have come to London in the first place, which
Sure. Yeah.
12 months ago, we would maybe have been focusing on trying to get those people to come. But if they weren't attending, then that's fine, because we've got a really good, focused, engaged audience at the physical show. But now, if we can get this to work, I think A, you'll have people that maybe is still unwilling to travel, but it opens it up to a whole bunch of other people. And you get it working, and then that hybrid model, which we were sort of halfway down the road with up until a month or two ago, will I think become more and more familiar for people.
Cool. Well, so before we wrap up, can you remind us how listeners could register to attend this year's event, and I guess what they expect to gain from it?
Yeah, fine. Well, first of all, right now and until about Tuesday next week, if you jump on the oceanologyinternational.com website, you can register for the events. The OI Connect is going to turn on it, the platform will be getting sent live on Tuesday next week. So all of the contacts and visitors that had already committed to coming to the show are being spoken to now, and will migrate over onto that platform, along with quite a large percentage of the exhibiting companies as well. Registration's free to attend, and really it's about looking at a platform, having a think about a slightly different way of how you might normally engage with people or organizations. I think figuring out exactly what's the most important things that you're trying to achieve, or that you would have been trying to achieve if you had been coming to the physical show. And then just jumping in and using that platform to make really clear what your objectives are, what you're looking to try and do, obviously where you work, the sectors that you're working in. And then over the next month, we'll be trying to connect people. As I said, there's a conference program that's attached to OI Connect. We'll have at least 5 or 6 hours of content that's being streamed every day, in and amongst people having their meetings, and that will also be available on demand. And yeah, so I'd thoroughly encourage anyone to jump on the platform, have a think about whether or not there is specific objectives that you're trying to achieve within this ocean tech sector and the ocean tech community, because the people and the organizations are kind of the same as they always would have been. Looking forward to seeing some representation from Rhode Island for the first time, and be interesting to see what some of the innovation is coming from your state in particular. But I mean, the community is the same community, and what we're trying to do is just get a slightly different method of engagement happening this year.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Blue Economy Podcast, presented by Rhode Island, the Ocean State. And thanks again to David Insey from Oceanology for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to learn more, catch up on past episodes, or shoot us a note with your comments, head to our website, www.blueeconomypodcast.com, or look us up on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. From Providence, Rhode Island, I'm your host, David Hirschman. Thanks for listening.